Hello and welcome to Starkey's monthly teleconference. We're here at the Starkey offices in Baltimore. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg. This is Rabbi Baruch Bayer.
Hello.
And we're here every last Wednesday at noon at dimdim.com and on the phone at 218-895-1203. Passcode 2020 pound. And at dimdim.com, it's the class name is Kosher. And this week we're going to be discussing
summer treats,
Slurpees, sodas, ice creams,
and fish.
Right. What's the connection between fish and
fish on a stick
and summer treats? I'm not exactly sure. So let's start with the Slurpees. Rabbi Bayer, you are known around here as the Slurpee expert, from a kosher perspective.
Yeah.
It's not true that you go every day for a Slurpee, right? But from a kosher perspective, what do we have to look
Rumors.
Right. What do we have to look at? I do want to bring up on our screen, for those of us joining us by web, let me see where it is. The Starkey Slurpee list, there it is. And that's available at the Starkey website. Now these flavors, let's read the introduction to this and you'll expound on this for us, Rabbi Bayer.
Sure.
The following list, actually I have it printed out, it'd be easier for me like that. The following list is for consumer information only and is accurate at the time of printing. What does that mean, for consumer information only? Obviously we put this out for consumers. What are we trying to say?
I think that's another way of saying that we're not actually certifying it, which we
say. Because then it says that the flavors are not certified by the Starkey. In other words, we don't want anybody to think that we actually certify these
flavors.
We're just, it's just for informational purposes. We're telling you what is out there that's certified
by someone.
By some organization.
Some reliable organization.
Okay. And also, the Starkey does not certify individual 7-Eleven locations. I think that's because at times people have thought that we actually certify the stores.
Right. Well, there are some cities where the local kosher agencies have certified the local 7-Eleven stores. We don't do that here in Baltimore, but there are some cities where that has happened. I think maybe in Chicago and possibly Detroit.
Okay, and so we don't certify any of the stores.
But as a rule, we don't.
What's the difference between a certified store or a store that's just, that we're just saying that the Slurpee flavors are kosher? What is the difference?
Right, so, I mean, this gets to the heart of the issue. And, you know, what we say about Slurpees really applies to fountain soda drinks as well. And that is that we have the Slurpee list basically is listing the Slurpee concentrates or Slurpee flavor components that each 7-Eleven has in the store that they attach to their Slurpee machine, and then they, you know, they add water and it makes the Slurpee. But we're not saying that the actual product that you have in your cup is necessarily certified. We're just saying that if the product you get in your cup is what they say it is, it's the flavor that's being claimed that to be kosher, then it's going to be kosher.
Okay, so how does the consumer know whether or not what he's getting in his cup is what he's being advertised?
Well, with 7-Eleven, we have found when we have checked, not that we check all the time, but when we have checked, that overwhelmingly, the flavors that are being claimed to be sold are the flavors that they're selling, number one. Number two, it's really in the best interests of the owners of the store to only sell the flavors that are being claimed, because, for example, if they had a Coca-Cola flavor and then they were substituting it with some off-brand, they could get into trouble with Coca-Cola. And on top of that,
right. So let me interrupt you 1 second. So we've So that's really no different than the sodas that you go to a fountain, wherever.
Correct.
And you ask for a fountain soda of Coca-Cola.
It's the same idea.
It's the same idea that you're relying on.
You're relying on the fact that...
Now, well, I would like to point out...
Just for 7-Eleven, also, you should just... I just want to point out that 7-Eleven does have... you know, we jokingly call them the Slurpee police, but they don't just check out Slurpees. They actually go and visit the stores. They have regional managers that visit their franchise stores on a regular basis to make sure that the stores are doing what they're supposed to do, including making sure that they're using the right flavors and products for the sodas and the Slurpees.
Right. So that only works. This logic only works for Slurpees and sodas. I'd like to point this out that. We don't say if you go to, let's take an extreme example. You go to a store, a supermarket, and they hand you a piece of chicken, and they say, well, this is Empire chicken.
Right.
So you say, well, you know, if they say it's Empire, it must be.
Yeah.
We would only accept that with a package and seal or under somebody's, under an organization's eye. Right?
Yeah, well, meat and fish
meat
and chicken
fish.
Have their own.
And even that, even a cookie, we wouldn't accept that someone is saying that this cookie comes from this,
correct,
you know, store without some package, the packaging being on it or the symbol being on it. We wouldn't accept that. It's only at Slurpees and sodas where the actual concerns are minimal, the kosher concerns
right.
are minimal. We have to be careful for it because there's a possibility of non-kosher flavors, but it's really a minimal concern, and that's
right.
why we allow
And that's
it.
Something else to point out. The overwhelming majority of flavors available to be used as Slurpees are kosher. There's, I think, maybe 2 out of 100 or more flavors
now,
would not be kosher.
What does that mean, flavors to be used as Slurpees? Can't they use any flavor at all for...
Well, any flavor that is basic, any soda flavor, any slow soda concentrate can be made into a Slurpee with the addition of a few simple kosher ingredients, which are added by the...
Are those proprietary secret ingredients?
Yeah, secret ingredients.
Do we know? Can we say what those are, or do we know?
We do know. I don't.
It might be.
There are things that basically they're adding in a couple of ingredients that give the flavor and the sugar the ability to take on that Slurpee
consistency. Right. Right. Let me just stop for a second, and I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg. This is Rabbi Baruch Beyer. We're at the Starkey offices, and if you have any questions, you can chat with us online. If you have questions, you want to talk about this or any other topic, feel free to chime in. Later, a little bit later, we're going to discuss again the worms and the fish issue, which we had discussed at length last time, and we are supposed to have Rabbi Shmuel Heineman join in with us to discuss. He was at a fishworm meeting in Flatbush yesterday with all the fishworms. No, with all the heads of the many mashkichim and heads of kashrus agencies around the country,
mm-hmm.
and they had a practicum in how to check the fish for these worms that we've been discussing. Somebody is asking, Yosef is asking, can we bother you about other flavors that aren't listed, or is the list updated as you get information?
The list is updated as best we can as we get information. We have contacts with 7-Eleven headquarters people in Texas, and as new flavors come online, they typically will send us the information that we need in order to ascertain if it's kosher or not. So as new flavors come out, we usually update that to the list.
So you can certainly, we get calls all the time about this particular flavor,
right.
that flavor,
right.
and then if we know something about it, sometimes that's the impetus for us to look into it.
Right.
Sometimes the people, where did you say, in Texas?
Yes.
They don't respond as quickly as the consumers see it in the stores.
Yeah, well, just for example, there's several new Mountain Dew flavors that came out just within the past month, which we weren't aware of, but consumers called us about it.
Right.
Some sort of a promotional thing with Mountain Dew. You could vote for the flavor online or something. I don't remember what. Anyway, but that was something that we got from the consumers, and we later found out that they were kosher.
Yeah, we do have a number of Slurpee flavors that are, what, dairy or not certified?
There's
which
a couple.
Are they?
There's only one
we
of them.
We don't list it on the site here. I don't
on
see
the top.
It.
On the top?
Oh, here we go. Twizzlers Strawberry is not certified until further notice. Monster Black
is not.
And Pina Colada and Tropicana Grape Wild Strawberry are all not kosher certified. I guess the more or less the others are. But again, there could be some new flavors. There are some also that are certified dairy, right?
Well, there was a Pepsi, Diet Pepsi flavor.
No longer?
That was certified dairy.
They don't make it anymore?
I believe they're not making it anymore.
This is a question that we really should talk about. Is there a concern that a particular dispenser with a kosher flavor had been previously used with a non-kosher flavor? I think that's the $64,000 question.
We've dealt with this question over the years. It's been asked many times. Typically, what we say is that the amount, first of all, like we said,
how does it get mixed? How would it get mixed? Explain.
Typically, what would happen is they have the way that it works is you have this box of concentrate. It gets connected into the back of this slurping machine, and it's fed into a reservoir on top of the area where you put your cup, and then the slurpee flows into there from there. So what would happen is they would, let's say they put Coca-Cola into that reservoir one day, and then the next day, or maybe when they run out of Coca-Cola, they'll replace it with potentially a non-kosher flavor. And then when that non-kosher flavor is finished, they will replace it with the kosher flavor. But the problem is that at the bottom of that reservoir, there might be some non-kosher flavor still left, and that will have to run out before the kosher flavor will come in.
So they don't clean it out, right?
Not necessarily.
They say, we've heard that the kids like it like that.
We spoke to 7-Eleven once, and they said that the kids like it to be mixed.
Right.
So they don't necessarily clean them out. However, again, one point that we made in the past, and it's still true, is that the overwhelming majority of flavors are kosher. So the likelihood of you getting a non-kosher flavor in there is not great. Number two, the only time this would possibly be an issue is in the first cup or two, which would be coming out of the dispenser after the non-kosher flavor was there, because after that, then it's all mixed up. And number three, there is the fact that we've always come on to that the amount of non-kosher flavor that might be in the flavor that's not certified.
Maybe it might be nullified.
It's probably nullified.
Nullified in your cup that is full of mostly kosher, but a little bit of non-certified. But this is why, actually, getting back to our disclaimer at the beginning of our list, that's why we have that disclaimer. We don't want people to say that it's Starkey is certifying these. We're not recommending it even. We're saying if you feel comfortable and there is definitely what to rely on, then you can go into the 7-Eleven and get a Slurpee. If you are uncomfortable with it, or your Rav or Rabbi is uncomfortable with it, then you should not get it. What's the next question? How about Slurpees at Royal Farms? I've heard they used to be acceptable, but no longer.
That's a local Baltimore question. Royal Farms is a store similar to 7-Eleven, a convenience store that sells Slurpee-like drinks.
Well, actually, if I could correct you, Rabbi Bayer, I looked up this question, where they have stores.
Yeah.
Actually, it's the Mid-Atlantic. They have in Virginia and Maryland and Pennsylvania and maybe Delaware. So not nearly as big as 7-Eleven.
Right.
And most of the people listening have never heard of Royal Farms. But yes, it is basically a local
issue. We could expand that question into other
types of stores
that sell Slurpee-like drinks. It happened to be we checked into the Royal Farms here in Baltimore because it was local, and people have been questioning it, and it is kosher. The flavors are all Coca-Cola certified flavors. The same thing would be, you could do it on your own, really, if in your own local area.
We came out with a list, right?
That we're going to
Kosher's
Currents magazine.
About the Royal Farms.
That's correct.
And about the Slurpees.
And about the Slurpees. Right. It's all together, yes.
Right. It should be available online soon also, the Royal Farms.
Right. Yes.
Right. So, I'm sorry, you were saying somebody could go and check out their own...
You can do it yourself. I mean, it's many stores, we've told people that in the past, many stores will be more than happy to allow you to check what's attached to the back, and they'll discuss with you what's been served or what have you. Again, the non-kosher flavors are far and few between, so more than likely, most of the flavors that have been served there have been kosher in the past.
So that's basically the Slurpees, more or less. Someone is asking here, question. We'll try to get to most of the questions. If one is traveling, can one reasonably buy bottled sealed beverages such as Coke and unflavored water? Well, the unflavored water is no problem
right.
at all. Water doesn't need a hefsher
right.
At all. But what about the sodas, sealed or unsealed, would be a question if you're traveling overseas, you're on an airplane somewhere.
Right.
Can you buy Coke? That's the
million-dollar question. Everyone asks that question.
Right. They ask that question more than the.
If you speak with the Orthodox Union, with the OU, who certifies Coca-Cola, they will tell you you can only purchase it with an OU on the bottle or on the can. However, for anyone who travels, you know that that's not necessarily always the case. What we've been told, kind of off the record by the OU, is that within North America, that includes Canada and the United States and Mexico.
I think they say England also, right?
And also in Europe, in the Western European countries, certainly, where they have strong kosher agencies, you can, and in Israel, obviously, you can drink Coke products without a problem. Once you would get off, you know, into Eastern Europe, into Asia, again, it's hard to imagine that there would be that many non-kosher ingredients in the Coca-Cola, but it's a little bit more iffy.
Well, is it true that the syrups are all made in Atlanta?
No.
It's not true?
No.
So they make them all over the world, yes. But the ingredients they get from the United States?
Not necessarily.
So there could be
possibly issues. Again, they do try to keep it standardized, but there are, you know, there's no guarantees on that. That's basically it. Pepsi, by the way, we have been told by Pepsi in the past, I haven't checked it out recently, but Pepsi has told us that the Pepsi products around the world are all the same. So, you know, where available, I guess Pepsi would be a better choice if you were in one of those areas where there's a question.
Okay, so let's move on. Time is running faster than we would like. Let's move on to the ice cream list. And we don't have this up on our website, but if you call us, we do provide the information about ice creams that are certified by other agencies and what you need to do. The most common one, I think, that we got the question about.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Wanted to say that just realize that none of these are Chol of Yisrael.
None of the Chol of Yisrael, correct. And we do. That's actually the first thing on the list that we created
right.
for the front desk to answer the question. The first comment is, it's not Chol of Yisrael. And at Baskin Robbins, which we actually know the rabbi who takes care of it, the Mashgiach,
right.
and we're comfortable recommending it. That some flavors are not kosher, actually, in Baskin Robbins.
Right.
I think most people know that.
They know that the marshmallows are not.
The marshmallows.
But I'm looking over your shoulder here. I see pink bubblegum. I didn't even know they had that flavor, but that would be.
And the Rocky Road also. Okay, so you go into a Baskin Robbins, and you're buying a flavor other than those. You really should. We do recommend to look on the tub. Buying, let's say, hard ice cream, look on the tub
right.
to ensure that it has the kosher symbol that it's supposed to have. And the same thing with the cakes. The cakes are kosher, but there you definitely must look for the kosher symbol because they could get cakes from somewhere else. Not all Baskin Robbins ice creams are made in the same facility.
To the best of our knowledge, the person who's certifying Baskin Robbins certifies all the Baskin Robbins flavors. That means all the facilities.
Right, so we're comfortable with that certification of the Baskin Robbins ice creams. Now, as with all other types of stores of this type, we don't have any information about the cones, the toppings, the shakes, the splits, the collages. All that is in the store. It depends on what kind of cones they're buying and what kind of toppings they're using. So it's necessary for the person who's going to buy to check that out themselves. We have no.
Right.
The possibility of knowing that.
Right. Someone's bringing up an issue. I think it's important about scoopers.
Yes, that is the question. Just like by the Slurpees, the commingling of product
right.
by the Baskin Robbins, the question is commingling of the kosher and non-kosher flavors. That they use
right.
the same scoopers. And how do we deal with that? Well, again, there are reasons to be lenient over there. We do tell people to have the store wash the scooper before they rinse the scooper before they use it on your, you know, to scoop out your kosher ice cream just in case it was used for something else
right.
previously. That doesn't solve all of the problems. For instance, if somebody is ordering a double scoop, somebody before you order the scoop of the non-kosher and then order the scoop of the kosher, they didn't wash it out for him.
Mm.
So there could be some trace elements in the
well,
kosher.
Someone mentioned online, I think it might be true that they do wash it out between. I think they dip it in water at least to in between flavors.
In between flavors, you think that
I
they
think
do?
I think so. I'm not
sure. I think that would depend on how how long the line is, and so
some
on.
Field
yeah,
research there.
I don't know how much I wouldn't vouch for that. But again, over there, the question is: do I have to worry that happened right before my ice cream, or maybe the ice cream got scooped out previously and was served to someone else?
Right.
There are some issues. We're not saying that it's Starkey or certified or that even recommended. We're saying there are leniencies. There are reasons. That it would be
right.
okay for a person to do it. If a person wants to be strict about it, that's fine as well. Is Rav Shmuel on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Rabbi Heinemann, how are you?
Yes, Rav Shem, how are you?
Okay, good. Okay, thank you for joining us. So we were last month, just to recap, for those who didn't join us last time, we discussed here about the worms and the fish. Sorry to change the topic so abruptly, but that's the nature of it.
Kashrus is
fast moving, and we discussed the different opinions of whether or not the worms, the Anisakis worms, are being found now, or we're finding them now. Perhaps they were always there, but now we're becoming more aware of them. Whether or not those are forbidden. Because they're worms and they're forbidden, or they subsumed under the leniency in the Shulchan Aruch in the Gemara that worms in the flesh of fish are permitted. And we discussed that whole issue pretty much at length last time. So what happened yesterday was that there was a big meeting in New York, in Brooklyn, under the auspices of the Vada Flatbush, that they discussed the practical ways of checking, not whether or not you're going to permit or forbid these fish, but the practical ways of checking for it. So, Rabbi Heinemann, you were there yesterday, right?
Yes, well, the meeting really was on Monday, and as you said, it was not to discuss if these worms are permitted or not. It was to show and to practice and for everyone to see exactly where these worms are located and the practicality of taking them out and to any organization or Rav HaMasher that would like to be machmir and remove them, how exactly will they go about doing it in their different places.
Right, so how do you go about doing it? So after, what did he show you? And after coming away from that meeting, do we now know how to do it?
Well, the truth of the matter is that it is not really difficult to do. The only problem is it's very tedious. They had a few pieces, there were quite a few samples of fish fillets that they had there, which they were working on, and then some of the pieces they found 10 or 20 worms, which
wow.
is quite a bit, and to take it out is tedious. It's not hard, but it's tedious. Once you've seen it and you've practiced a little bit, you really can come proficient. But the question is of how practical it is to do in a fish store to actually remove these worms. The Starkey policy presently is that since there are some gazelim who feel it's also not permitted, some who say it is permitted, and therefore it would become a suffix deraisa. And therefore, the prudent thing would be to be mastered by suffix device that we're mastered. So,
the
Starkey policy is at present that we are not using fish which have problematic, which have worms in them, which could be problematic. And the idea of this conference was to find a way of how to remove them. I think what we came away with was that there is quite a number of worms in these particular fish which we are not accepting right now. A practical way of how to do it on a store level, on a restaurant level, we don't really know at the moment. It happens to be that a lot of the frozen fillets, which are packaged in China, that the companies themselves have people their workers. It's all lined up on big tables. It's got lights underneath, light tables. It looks like an operating room. There's all those bright lights shining through the fish. And the workers over there are pulling out one by one. We saw some pictures of it, how they pull out one by one all the worms from the fish. So there are some...
Is that enough? Would we rely on the people in China to do that? I mean, that's enough for us?
No, they're a flying title ban. The law of the world gave a letter on the products which he certifies, the disclosing products, saying that his products are free from Taiwan.
So maybe the non-Jewish workers are pulling out the worms, and then the mashgiach would be like spot checking them.
Well, I think what he means to say is that after the workers are pulling out the worms, it's not considered anymore a mir hamatzri. You might find here and there, you might find the worm, but Allah halacha, you would not have to check it anymore when you get.
I see.
When you do flash the fillets. So that's what he's saying on his fillets. That would not be true necessarily on all fillets, because it depends on what the system is in place in the plant that's packing it, if they actually are very diligent to remove these worms or not.
Okay, so let me just repeat. What you're saying is that some of the kosher certifying agencies are arranging that where the fish is packed in China, to have the worms removed there, and then there's the rabbi is then saying that they don't have to be checked further when you purchase it. Because I was thinking, Reb Shmuel, I was thinking that would this be doable for people in their homes who buy a fish from a regular fish store that's unchecked, and they're going to be then taking a tweezers and looking through on a light box. I know that it's doable. The question is, I'm just thinking of a typical woman preparing a meal. She's sitting there pulling out the worms from the fish, and then she's going to serve it. Something in me tells me that they're not going to want to do that.
Yeah, for sure they're not going to do it. I mean, a lot of the worms they pulled out by this conference, they were actually live worms, and you could see them swimming around, and it doesn't look very appetizing. I don't think that the housewife is going to be doing this.
Right.
What I think is going to happen is that the housewife will not buy these kind of fresh fish, because unless it's going to come to the store that's actually going to check it.
Well, was there a widespread agreement about which fish were the ones that were problematic on the list that we have here? Was that the one that people seem to be working off of and saying that that was correct?
At the conference, we only checked about four or five species of fish. We didn't go through all of them. We only checked through the ones which we know to be problematic, and I think it was more to make a dramatic effect that you see how many worms there are there to the dozens. That's what they pulled out to the store.
I saw a copy of the video, and I saw them working on the hake fish. That would seem to be very infested.
Right, the hake was terribly infested. They pulled out one after another. In the salmon, there is no way to check it, because you really have to cut it apart, and it's not presentable anymore.
Right,
for ground fish, you cannot make a nice salmon steak or a salmon fillet. It's destroyed after you actually get out of all the worms.
So right now we have no practical way of checking a wild salmon, because in order to check it, you have to really cut it into little pieces because of the color of the salmon, right? It's hard to see the worms. So right now we don't have a solution for wild salmon. Neither do we have a solution for the canned salmon, right?
Well, the canned salmon generally is made from a wild salmon. My understanding is that Dagim now has made a production, not under the name Dagim, but under the name Dagiam, which is going to be made from farm-raised salmon.
Okay.
That will not be a problem. I'm sure it will stay clearly on the can made from farm-raised salmon, because they're trying to attract people who have stopped buying the other salmon to buy the salmon. But the main fisheries and the canneries that make the canned salmon are in the Alaska and North Pacific area, where the wild salmon is harvested. And so therefore, to get to ship over there farm-raised salmon is a little bit of a problem. I think they have to go to a different plant in order to make it. And it's not yet widely available, but I'm sure if the consumer requests it and demands it, so everyone will, all the kosher companies will be switching over to a farm-raised canned salmon.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Heineman. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Okay,
thank you. So what Rav Shmuel Heineman was saying, just to recap, because it may have been hard to hear him on the dim-dim, was that at this meeting they showed that some of the fish, they checked the most problematic fish, hake and wild salmon and some others, and they found in some of them maybe 20 Anisakis worms. And that as the wild salmon, the conclusion is really it's impossible to really practically check it because you're going to destroy the salmon because the color is hard to see. So
right.
You have to use a light and cut it up and this and that.
Right.
So it would be hard to see. The other thing he said was that now there is going to be a production under reliable certification of canned salmon made from farm salmon. Now normally canned salmon has been made from wild salmon. I read that the reason for that is just it's more easy to pack into a can. Lends itself, and now they're going to go ahead and make a canned salmon out of farm salmon, and that will say on it farm salmon, and it wouldn't be any problem at all. So that would solve that. Okay,
I think the bottom line is you should stick with Slurpees and ice cream.
Slurpees and ice.
Forget the fish.
that's what we said last time. Rabbi Frankel said they're going to have chicken for supper. We were saying that the funny thing is that it used to be you go to a chasana and people who were more strict say about the kosher, they would
That's
say
right.
don't give
Keep
me any meat, I only want the fish. Nowadays it's going to be please don't serve me any fish, just give me some meat please. I don't want to get into any questionable issues. So Talia is asking, are you recommending that canned salmon, even if already purchased, should not be used from now on? We're recommending right now to hold off until we can figure out what the amount of worms in the salmon is, or if there's any other halachic or practical way out of that problem. The OU, as far as I know, is still standing behind those salmons that they certified.
Oh, really?
I believe that they are. I don't believe they've changed their policy, and that's, they have their post-kim, and that's fine if a person is relying on that. But if you're asking what the Star K is recommending, I think right now we are recommending to hold off on canned salmon, just leave it, wild canned salmon, which most of it is, leave it in your cabinet, and wait to see if there is some way out.
Someone just asked that question, if they have canned salmon from about 6 months ago.
Oh, that's a good question. We don't have a clear answer on that. It could be that one is not obligated to worry about something where the issue just came up. Maybe 6 months ago it was different. Who knows? It has a certification on it.
Has there been any explanation of why this has come up so suddenly? Is this a global warming or something?
No, you can't blame it on any politician if that's what you're trying to say. You can't, that's part of the question, is why is it all of a sudden now that the salmon is, not the salmon, but the fish is becoming an issue? There are various explanations, which I don't know if they hold water or not. Excuse
no
the
pun.
No
pun intended, yeah.
That nowadays there's been a decimation of the predators, like the whales, and because of that, there was a decimation. Therefore, there are marine acts that protect now the mammals, and therefore, since they
There's
are
more.
Part of the host
uh-huh.
process, the
so more marine mammals makes more
make more Anisakis.
More Anisakis.
I think that's a little bit far out to think that could be the reason.
A little fishy.
That's a little fishy.
I couldn't resist that.
What about these patches of marinated salmon, farmed or wild caught? It would be the same question. I mean, we would now recommend only the farmed, and not the wild.
I think he's asking, are they farmed or
are they?
Are they
farmed or are they wild caught? The rule that we have been saying is that if it doesn't say anything on it, you can assume that it's farmed. And the very simple economic reason for that is that wild salmon is maybe two or three times the price of farmed.
Which is counterintuitive because they use it for the can, and you would think that would be the...
Okay, but that's because they have a practical problem
right.
canning
right,
it.
Right.
But generally, it's much more expensive, and unless it says wild on it, we can assume that it's not. Same thing goes for locks.
It says wild.
Unless it says wild, we have a right to assume that it's farmed. That's been the logic that we've been telling people. Yanki is asking, at a wedding, can you assume it's farmed? I guess it depends how fancy a wedding it is. I'm
we
not
were
sure.
Told,
that,
we were
I'm
told
not sure.
by one of the rabbis, I believe, who takes care of the catering,
yeah.
that almost all of those fillets that you have are from farmed salmon.
That are served at weddings?
Yeah, that's what he was saying.
Okay, we
I don't know if you can say that as a rule, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, we would want to look into that. That's an excellent question. If you're going somewhere to a wedding and you can't really investigate at that point, do you have a right to assume that it's farmed only because it's cheaper? Or that we should look into that. You know, we could make a survey of caterers. And
right.
And if we survey, let's say, 20, 30 caterers,
mm-hmm.
and they say, yes, we use farmed, and nobody there in the business is serving wild just because of the expense.
Then you're saying ask the mashkiach, but he won't necessarily know.
Well, you should ask the mashkiach. The mashkiach, right. The mashkiach may not know because it's not something that's been looked into until now. If you ask him now, he might know.
Right.
Right. He might be able to tell you. That would be a good way out of it. But again, these are not issues that have been heavily researched by the kashrus agencies.
Right. Because it's all new.
Because
all new. We're in uncharted waters.
Because we're first starting to look into it. And okay, so I think there was some other. Let me try to handle some of the other issues that we missed. I said he's asking at a non-fancy wedding where everything is discount, it can be assumed to be farmed. Even at the $18 a plate chasana, can you assume it's farmed? I would guess that would be a pretty good assumption. Since all caterers are aware of the issues, the certifying agencies would not be allowing wild.
I think at this point that's probably true.
Well, I don't know if that's true because if the certifying agency, there are reliable agencies in the United States that are still allowing these fish, and they're not because they're poskim.
Chicago,
as far as I know, the CRC in Chicago is permitting it, and OU is permitting it. I don't know about the others. So
you can drink the water in Chicago, just don't eat fish.
So if they are permitting it, and you rely on that agency, so then. It very well could be wild, and then you know you have no problem if that's
right.
You know if they're your posek, then we're not going out saying everybody should accept this policy. It's just for
right.
those people that follow Starcade.
When do we hope to complete the guidelines as soon as possible?
Well, as you see, this meeting on Monday was a step in the right direction to try to figure out what is the proper. Guidelines. Is there any way that we can practically have a fish store, check the fish? Is it practical?
The practical is like Rabbi Hanan was saying. It's tedious and you need speed when you're dealing with places like that.
And so it's going to take us some time. I mean, we have a whole website of check for insects, right? .com that discusses how Starcade feels that one should check their vegetables, and that's been in the works. For many, you know, it's been updated and revised, as we get more experience with it, and that's been over many years. So this is a new issue, and it really will take some time. Yes, the OU, as far as we know, is still allowing the wild salmon based on Rabbi Belsky's psak, his ruling. The OU has an audio on this issue from Rabbi Belsky that one can access over there, and you know this is
CRC are also
the CRC in Chicago is also allowing it. Okay, I think we've really
beaten that one to.
I think we've really discussed that issue at length. And if anybody has any further questions, I'm sure people do. You're more than welcome to contact us at the star K, 410-484-4110. You can email us at star-k@star-k.org. And we are here with you every... Can I have a paper, please? We are here with you every Wednesday at noon, the last Wednesday of the month at noon, at on the phone, 218-895-1203, #2020. That's the passcode. And online at dimdim.com. And the classroom there is kosher. I want to thank everyone for joining us, and appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to come be with us. And I want to thank Reb Zev Stein for getting all the technical issues settled. This class, as all our other classes, will be archived at kosherclasses.org, kosherclasses.org, and under podcast. So you can find it, you should be able to find it there in a couple of days. And thank you again. Have a very good day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Good fishing.